This is The Agenda from News Radio 560, KPQ, and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern are open for discussion.
Well, it is 12:14, and thank you for joining us on the program today. We have John Jackson on the line with us, who was going to be in studio. Unfortunately, last-second emergency popping up. And so John is en route back home, was over here in the area for yesterday's 9/11 observance because he had a very special hand in bringing that spirit of America 9/11 Memorial to our Kashmir area. And so that's why we had John lined up to be on the program today. I know, John, you need to get back home over to Western Washington. We're doing this by phone today. You're over on the side of I-90 there. Thanks for taking a few minutes out of your time so we could still get some time to visit. Thank you for joining us today.
It's totally my pleasure and an honor, too. So thank you very much for having me.
Well, so we'll move along on the pace of the discussion a little quicker than we would have if you'd been in the studio, but we must start with yesterday, your remembrances of yesterday's ceremony. It was a very special observance with the dedication of the two new monuments that recognize the names of those lost in the Twin Towers and on 9/11 on those granite columns. Must have been fantastic.
Yeah, it was awe-inspiring, actually, and it was you know, a combination of 18-year journey now that's finally came to an end, and it's just such a fitting place for it and such an honor and such a beautiful dedication. I can't say how just speechless I am that Kashmir has embraced this memorial in the way that it totally deserves. So I'm just totally almost speechless about it.
Well, what has your role and involvement, and for maybe to recount those that are maybe newer to our area, don't know the story of how this ended up, this memorial in Kashmir of all places?
Well, it's a long story, obviously, but originally it was we were trying to get it at the state capitol. And so this memorial has been, you know, we brought the material in 04, and then we had a 10-year rule that the Capitol Grounds Committee and the state of Washington had that said that you couldn't place any commemorative artworks on Capitol grounds until 10 years after the event. And so we just did fundraising for 10 years and went back to the state, and unfortunately, we got a letter back from them and the administration that they didn't feel that it was, appropriate for the state capitol. And so at that point I just didn't respond back to them, put it up for proposals, and out of 17 cities, Kashmir was one of the three finalists, and through a secret vote of the board, which I didn't participate in, Kashmir won the memorial and also was awarded the nonprofit 501c3, the Spirit of America Foundation. So
well, the state capitol's loss, I'll just put it that way, and to our gain, and it's wonderful to have it in Kashmir. So once the memorial project began to move forward, talk about maybe some of your role in getting the materials, some of which are from Ground Zero.
Yeah, this is an amazing story. Each time, I think about it, it's almost hard to believe. But, you know, as an American and you get involved in something like this, you can't pick up the phone and just call somebody and say, hey, I need a piece of the World Trade Center. And so there was a lot of people that I reached out to. And, we reached out to a guy that was working at the port authorities in New York just a few days after 9/11. And, he asked us, that they had significant pieces and to keep in touch. And so on the year anniversary, me and one of our board members, which was a welder that worked for me for years, his grandfather was Charles Lindbergh. And so his family had the Lindbergh Foundation and were instrumental in helping us get set up the Spirit of America Foundation. And that's why I called it the Spirit of America Foundation in honor of the Lindbergh Foundation. And so, that being said, we went to New York City on the year anniversary. We had a model of the memorial with us, and we went to meet the guy, and he was saying, hey, I'm not that high up. I can't really promise you anything and, you know, keep in touch. So we left there kind of dejected, got in the elevator, went down a couple of floors, and a gentleman pulled into the elevator with us, and he kind of looked at me funny and said, hey, what do you got in the box? And so we showed him in the lobby, and, you know, he pulls his wallet out, and he says, I'm the deputy director of the Port Authorities in New York. Here's my assistant's phone number. Whatever you need, you'll have. I have to go to a 9/11 ceremony, and you guys have a great day.
How about that? How about that?
So a chance, you know, encountering an elevator. So, and that's kind of how the whole foundation got put together. And, you know, same kind of a story when you look at, you know, how the pieces of the Pentagon were acquired. And that was a unique story in itself as well, and had to do with that model that we had from the architect, because at that point, you know, I was just hitting dead ends trying to get the pieces from the Pentagon, and happened to take this model in and drop it off at a foundry in Tacoma and said, hey, I'm looking for an artist that might work with us that can do bronze and stuff. And so I leave there, and about 10 minutes later, I get a call from them saying, hey, there's a gentleman that wants to speak to you. And so this guy's name is Jim Demetrio. He's a retired engineer, and he's a sculptor in Vancouver, Washington. And his wife is an American Airlines stewardess for like 26 years and knew the crew that flew into the North Tower. And so he was motivated to be part of the foundation, and he had free air travel, so we brought him in as a board member and made him our curator for historical artifacts. And he was able to, you know, go to New York City and make the contacts that we made, follow through, and pick out the piece. And so we told him that we were looking for somebody to have a connection with the Pentagon. He said, well, I have this lady that I know, and she, you know, would like to have dinner with you guys, and you can meet with her. And she was a naturopathic doctor down in the Vancouver area. And so we met with her and told her what we were trying to do. And she said, well, my dad works for the Pentagon. I don't know what he does, but he might be able to help us, right? So the next day, I get this phone call from Major General Dean Cash of the Future War Scenarios Department at the Pentagon. He says, well, how soon can you get here, and how much do you need? So
there you go. There you go. This was meant to be.
It was meant to be. Yep. And so he hooked us up with the Pentagon renovations people that were renovating the Pentagon when it was attacked. And they had this significant area of pieces that they set aside for memorials and museums, and gave us two pieces. And so the Spirit of America Foundation has one piece that's in Kashmir and one that's in a 9/11 memorial that's in Bremerton as well. So kind of on both sides of the...
Well, John, when we spoke the other day, we're getting with John Jackson, who has been there from literally the beginning of bringing this memorial to Kashmir and getting the project off the ground and here into Kashmir. You told me that you get a chance to speak to groups around the state and share kind of this story. How's that been going? How often do you get a chance to address groups?
You know, it's just, you know, when I get approached, I'm not trying to be on a speaker circuit or anything. I definitely don't charge for it or anything. But it's mainly, you know, congregations. I've spoke at a lot of churches and you know, because it has such a spiritual connection to it, you know, this memorial does. And so, you know, with that, you know, I like to talk to people who, you know, have those kind of, those values in life. And so, but I like to share with the younger generation because I think that's very important. And I'm pretty excited to, hear, you know, what Kashmir's, you know, plans are with the foundation and how they're going to be working with the school districts and really making this thing a significant, piece of historical value to the community and to the future generations. So it's awesome. Couldn't be in a better place. And, you know, if you look at it and you put your finger on it in the map, it's the same place from everywhere in Washington, you know. So
that's for sure. It's in the right spot. It's in the right spot. When we spoke last week and we're arranging a date, unfortunately, we didn't have any openings prior to 9/11, and you were going to be here, of course, for the ceremony yesterday. You told me an interesting story, and it's a kind of a common theme that runs through this project for you, by chance, happenstance, occasion to meet someone who could help with the project that you would run into here or there. Instrumental along the way, but you also had a very, as it would turn out, chilling meeting, and I'll let you take it from there because I don't want to steal your thunder. This is amazing. I'm getting chills remembering what you told me last week.
Oh, you're talking about the airport.
Yeah, in the airport. Okay. Share that for our listeners.
Well, you know, kind of this is part of the motivation and the fire that was in my belly, you know, but probably about 10 days before 9/11, I get a phone call from my sister-in-law who's in Vienna, Virginia, right there near Washington, D.C., and she says, hey, your mother-in-law is having a nervous breakdown. You need to come here, pack her stuff up, and bring her back to Washington, right? So me owning my own businesses, I was able to just, you know, stop what I was doing, and next thing I know, I was on an American Airlines flight, red-eye, going over to the East Coast, and I had this layover near Pennsylvania. And so I was sitting in the airport with a cowboy hat on and a pair of boots and sitting in the airport in this area of the airport, and it was completely empty after everybody got off the plane. It's like 4:30 in the morning or something. And so I noticed kind of out of my eyes this guy walking around in the airport, and he had this kind of a tan suit on, and he comes over and he sits right across from me. He looks at me with this evil stare in his eyes, and he just kind of sat there. And he was Middle Eastern, and I just couldn't figure out what he was thinking. I looked at him and kind of, you know, looked away, and he just stood there and stared at me. And then he got back up again and wandered around a little bit. Another flight came in, and they came and went. And he was still there until for about 30 minutes, and then he got up and just walked away real casual with a really smug look on his face. Never thought about it again, right, until months later after 9/11. And those eyes I'll never forget. And it was one of the hijackers that casing out an airport on the East Coast for a red-eye, nonstop, cross-country flight with American Airlines, right? Mm. So, yeah, it was pretty chilling when I seen that. But at that point, you know, this whole process with this memorial had already started. And, you know, from the second day after 9/11, you know, and so the inspiration behind that came from a commercial fishing boat that sank in 1997 out of Seattle. And that's why I did this memorial, was because of that fishing boat.
Well, it's a wonderful project. I'm glad you've been part of it from day one. And for those that couldn't get away yesterday and be at the ceremony, maybe you can take some time out this weekend and swing by Kashmir and spend a little quiet time at the Spirit of America 9/11 Memorial and take a look at the new monuments that were unveiled and dedicated this 9/11 Patriots Day yesterday in Kashmir. Spend a little quiet time and reflect, because we all need to do that, remember all of those that were lost. John, any final words? We'll let you get back on the road. We really appreciate you pulling over and sharing some of the details, and maybe next year we'll get you on the show before 9/11 and we can talk a lot more about the project.
Yep. And, you know, I just can't tell the community how, proud I am of them, of how they have embraced this memorial and really taken it to the next level. With the county of Chelan decreeing it as their 9/11 memorial. So it's just really great how the county and the whole community has stepped up for this. I just couldn't be more proud of what these Americans have done in this area, for sure.
Well, thank you for pointing that out, but thank you for your involvement and helping make it happen. Appreciate the time today.
Hey, no problem, and thank you very much for having me.
Safe travels.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's John Jackson joining us on The Agenda. News Radio 560 KPQ, and we are going to finish up the program today with a rebroadcast of a segment we did with the new executive director of the Numerica Performing Arts Center. We'll get to that segment here in just a moment. Robert Cox, and we'll be talking about the first big performance coming next week at the Numerica Performing Arts Center. And we'll even touch on the performance that is coming up this weekend, The Elephant Man. Well, revisiting the interview we did with Robert Cox, the new executive director at the Performing Arts Center, and the great lineup that's about to kick off next week. Well, welcome to our studios, and thanks for joining us. It's been about 8 weeks since you've been in the post, correct?
Thank you. That is correct. I've been there. This is the end of my eighth week. So 2 months of drinking from the fire hose, like I said earlier. It's an amazing place. It is huge. There's a lot going on all the time. And so there's been a lot to learn and a lot to catch up with, but I have a great staff. And all of them have been there for a number of years. And they're very helpful, and they've been terrific in teaching me what's going on, what's been going on, how we do things. It's quite a whirlwind for the last 8 weeks.
It's a wonderful facility. We're going to talk about the great fall lineup that continues on into the winter, and the great show to kick that off. We'll get to that here in just a minute, but let's talk about your background. You've actually been here in our area and working in the world of high tech, and right, making a little bit of a change in the career. And I know the PAC is delighted to have you. But tell us a little bit about your background, what you've been doing.
Sure.
And you've got definitely have a strong connection to the world of theater and performance. Through your wife, I had a chance to meet both of you a little earlier this summer, but give us a little bit on your background.
That's right. So I actually met my wife at Rutgers University. So I have a master's degree in stage direction from Rutgers at the Mason Gross School of the Arts. She also got her degree there. She went off, she worked on Broadway for a couple of years, and then the dean of the school asked her to come back and teach and work for the professional touring company at Rutgers. My office was down the hall from hers, and that's how we met.
Wonderful.
So, but I picked up my degree there. The two of us then went up to Boston and helped to build a regional theater at Brandeis University on their campus. And we did that for a couple of years, ended up going back to New York where I did freelance directing in the city. And then I worked as the artistic director of the Great Hall for the Cooper Union, which is a really long-named college. And but it's the Great Hall is where Lincoln spoke and gave his Might Makes Right speech. It's where Geronimo spoke. It's a phenomenal place. And so we did some terrific, terrific stuff in that space. And but what I found out very quickly within, say, a decade was that you can't make a lot of money as a director in theater unless you get that lucky break and someone hires you to direct something that's very expensive. So I started doing project management work on my off time doing theater. And then I transitioned into teaching part-time and project managing part-time, and then ended up working as a property manager and then a portfolio manager and an operations manager. And I just built my way up in the commercial world. And then in my spare time, instead of learning to play golf like a lot of guys do, I did theater. So I ran theater companies sort of in my off time, and then ran corporation properties and portfolios during the workday. And that's how I ended up out here, was that I was working for Amazon on the East Coast. So I was in charge of their operations from Manhattan down to Delaware. And I got a call one day from a guy in London who said, what would it take to get you to leave Amazon and come do the same thing for Microsoft's data centers? And I said, well, gee, what it would take is convincing my wife, who has lived in Manhattan all her life, to leave. So actually what happened was we started looking at videos of Wenatchee, and we started with We Are Wenatchee, the terrific video that the Chamber of Commerce put out.
Aren't those terrific?
Oh, it is. They are. There's three of them, right? And they're so honest about what Wenatchee is. They show off all the highlights. They say the people here are friendly. They're very community-oriented, and it's very arts-oriented. Come and live out here. And by the end of it, we said, yeah, okay, that's what we'll do. We'll come out to Wenatchee and give it a try. And happily, it is as advertised here. You know, it's drop-dead gorgeous. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever lived, and I've lived all over the country. I grew up in the Army, so we moved every couple of years. And the people are incredibly friendly and incredibly community-oriented. The volunteer day and all of the other volunteering work that goes on here is more than I've seen anywhere else across the country. And so we fell in love. And when the end of my 2 years of contract, so I contracted with them to come out for 2 years, when it was done, and I said, actually a few months early, I said, okay, here you are. It's all set up. It's exactly what you want, right? And they were very happy, and they gave me a lovely bonus. And they said, now we want you to go to San Antonio and do the same thing. And I thought, well, gee, I've lived there, and it's not bad, but it's not really my cup of tea, and I've sort of fallen in love with this place. So thank you for the offer, but I think I'm going to look for something here. And lo and behold, this position was open and available. I had the background of 30 years in theater and 30 years in business, and so I threw my hat in the ring, and here I am. That's how I got rolling.
And that was meant to be, I think. So there you go. Good timing wonderful background, and got a chance to it was actually the Run with a Cop event. And I first ran into your wife, and you were over there pumping gas.
Yep.
We got a little opportunity to talk. Of course, you were out working in Quincy. My daughter teaches in Quincy, and we got a chance to talk. And so here we are. And,
this is great.
So good opportunity to bring you onto the Agenda program. So here we are. The world-famous Glenn Miller Orchestra swings into the Numerica Pack coming up on September the 18th. First off, needs no introduction. Are there tickets left?
There are tickets left. I'll be honest with you. They have been selling very quickly, but there are still some tickets left. People still can get in to see them. And you're right. I went to see them about 15 years ago, and I was just blown out of my chair. They are every bit as good today as when Glenn Miller was with them, all those many years ago. Their work ethic and their style and the quality of what they do is the top of the game. There really isn't any big band sound better than what these guys are putting out. I personally bought a ticket. So I am making sure, actually I bought two tickets. I'm making sure that myself and my wife will be there because I don't want to miss it.
Well, it's again, it's coming up on September the 18th, 7:30. And their build is pretty much the most sought-after big band in the world. You've seen them. You can attest to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've seen a lot of the other. I've seen the Duke Ellington, and I've seen others. Sorry, escapes my mind at the moment. But I've seen other really terrific big band groups. But this is really the top, and I enjoy them. Third, I just want to tell you one little thing. Just prior to them, on September 12th, 13th, and 14th, we have got the Mission Creek Players. Now, this is not a packed production, but they've rented the space, and they're doing a production of The Elephant Man on the 12th, 13th, and 14th of September, also at 7:30. And tickets are only $25 for that. So anybody who would like to see, it's a drama. It's a very serious play about the John Merrick, who was so horribly abused until he was discovered, so to speak, and brought into the world of society. And so it's a very interesting play about how we treat each other as human beings. If anybody is interested, that's going to be happening just before Glenn Miller.
Well, timely that you bring that up. Your predecessor, Matt Cadman, is directing, and he's going to be our guest on the program coming up next week. I think it's next Wednesday.
That's right.
We're going to have, it's either Tuesday or Wednesday we'll have Matt on the program, and we're going to focus on that performance that you can catch. And
that's
so,
great. You know, it, just as a funny side note, Matt Cadman is one of the two people that when we were living in New York and we were offered, I was offered this job, and I said, well, I will come out there if my wife wants to go, and I won't come out there if she doesn't want to go. We reached out to two people to ask about the area. One of them was Shiloh over at the Chamber of Commerce, and the other was Matt Cadman. And Matt Cadman said, oh, my gosh, yes, come on out. It's wonderful here. And to wind up trying to fill those shoes after he has moved on to other things is both prolific and it's an experience, and I've spoken with Matt, and we've had a couple of conversations, and I think that he's going to be a big help for me in terms of getting up to speed and being able to do what needs to be done to keep things alive there.
We're talking with Robert Cox, new executive director for the America Performing Arts Center. Now I'm going to tell my little story, and that's because on October the 11th, it's an evening with Jake Shimabukuro, and he plays the ukulele. I thought when he was here a couple of years ago, nobody in Wenatchee knows about this guy. I can take my time getting tickets. I eventually said, oh, yeah, I got to remember to get those tickets. Went down to the PAC box office and said, yeah, I'd like to get some tickets. Well, they showed me the chart, and I think there were eight left, all in the back row. And I said, oh, my goodness, I almost blew this. Don't sleep on getting your tickets to see this virtuoso on the ukulele. This guy is amazing. So get your tickets before they're all gone. Don't blow it like I almost did. He is amazing, and I know you would agree.
I agree with you 100%. He is amazing, and his show is selling out. I think that if we bring him back, not next year, but maybe in a couple of years, we'll try and bring him back again. We'll try to get two performances, but the problem is he is so good. He's traveling all over the country all the time, and when he leaves here the next night, he has a performance, I think in not Spokane, but anyway, he has another performance to about 2,500, 3,000 people.
Now, revisiting the conversation with Robert Cox, the new executive director at the Performing Arts Center, and some of the shows coming up, including this weekend with the Elephant Man, and they kick off their season with the Glenn Miller Orchestra on September the 18th.